This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
While Chicago adjusts to working at home, the score is there for you.
I appreciate you guys being there for us to listen to.
Everybody's listening. Kudos to you guys. Keep it going. I'm a loyal score listener. I appreciate it all the time, but more than ever right now with you guys.
We are Chicago's number one sports station. 670 The Score, a radio.com sports station. WSCR and HD Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago.
The Score!
Mully and Hall. Mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com. Chicago Sports Station.
Olin Krutz.
The Bears' number one issue continues to be scoring points. And we all came into this year saying, if the defense can't get the turnovers, can the offense take the next step and score enough points to win a game? Right? If they don't put them in good position to score. And the answer ended up being a big no.
Olin Krutz.
Coach Nagy, he is an offensive guy. He brought his scheme. But he's in charge of the team as the head football coach. Is he willing to change the scheme to benefit the team, which means he has to fire himself as the offensive coordinator? When they look at this and sit in a room, Big Ant, like me and you would, and be really honest with each other, if they do that, you have to question the direction that this offense is headed in.
Olin Krutz, every week with Mully and Haw.
He probably doesn't like you, but he loves to talk Bears with Mully and Haw.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Oh my God. We desperately need some Christmas spirits, and no one brings it like Olin, who joins us on the Alphamonte Ford Hotline. Alphamonte Ford in Melrose Park. You're like Father Christmas, Olin. You just come in and it's all good cheer and happy times.
How are you? Hey, Olin.
How's it going, guys? I'm good to talk to you guys this morning.
You too.
It's great to talk to you, and it's great to have some football to talk about. And we look at the Bears.
I like hearing Dustin talk about fat offensive linemen, and they should look like tight ends. Like he does, spoken like a guy who's a true guy who's never taken on a bull rush, right? So, anyway, they can't bull rush you out there. If you put a tight end out there, they're just gonna run that guy over, Dustin. Just in case you're wondering, anytime you want to try sit down a bull rush, let me know when I come into the Score. When the studios open up again, I'll show you what a bull rush looks like.
I love it. That's great.
That's beautiful. What do you think about his idea, though? I like that idea that Aldon Smith, all you got to do is go get the quarterback. Don't even worry about doing anything other than go get the ball, go get it from that guy. We're going to line you up 4 years after you last played.
Right, 4 years. And then just that shows you, when a guy can rush the passer, they'll stick around for a long time and always get a second shot, right? And you just hope he's obviously cleaned up his life and got into a place where he can handle the pressures of the NFL and being on the road and guys going out and having a few beers and all the things that come with being an NFL football player and offer all the opportunities you have to go out and hang out with people and do things you probably shouldn't be doing. So hopefully he's got that all fixed. But other than that, we all know how good Aldon Smith was at getting after the passer. Those kind of guys are rare. Everybody's trying to find one. So if he looked good and he's in shape. I'm not shocked that he got another shot to go get back in the NFL, especially with the way, you know, the way the NFL is headed, where it's a lot of passing and get after the quarterback. I mean, I know you guys who have covered the NFL for a long time are not shocked that a guy like Aldon Smith got another shot at it.
No. I mean, only because of the layoff, it's unusual, but you're right about, you know, the priority of getting to the passer. Besides getting a good passer, that's your number two priority if you want to be a championship team. Olin, let's look at the Bears. Let's look at what we're going to get later today. Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy will talk. Nick Foles will talk. And earlier this week, we found out exactly how his contract is structured. And it's going to be spread out. It's the $8 million cap hit. The $21 million is still guaranteed. But I want to know from your perspective, if you're a player in that Bears locker room, what does it say that the Bears are guaranteeing Nick Foles $21 million? And regardless of what you hear today, what is the message to the players about the quarterback position?
That the quarterback didn't play well enough last year. And Coach Nagy, no matter what they said at the podium, no matter what Ryan Pace said, when he said to you that Mitch Trubisky needed to know the offense better than him, it just said to me out loud that Mitch really struggled with that last year. Something we talked about a lot on the radio, that it looked like he was struggling with processing information, reading RPOs, reading the zone read, reading the, you know, going through his progression in the pocket, reading the defense post-snap, what coverage are they in, what blitzers are coming. And here comes in a guy, Nick Foles, where, like you guys know, that's his strength. That's what he does really well. So Coach Nagy said that Mitch needed to know the offense better than he did. So they went out and got a guy that does know the offense, probably better than anybody who's in the meeting rooms right now, as far as players go. So it's a competition. If you ask me, Nick Foles is the starter going into camp. Mr. Trubisky is going to have to make a big jump to win his job back. I'm sure they'll give him that chance, just because, you know, if one more first round pick doesn't do well for Ryan Pace, I'm sure George McCaskey, them up in there, and Ted Phillips up in their offices wondering what the hell is going on, that all our first round picks are either off the team or the backup right now. So they're going to give him his chance, but Nick Foles is obviously in the lead. That's why they brought him in. They brought him in because their defense and now their front seven, adding Robert Quinn, is a really good defense as long as they stay healthy with Akeem Hicks and Eddie Goldman and Mack and Trevathan, and hopefully Roquan Smith takes another jump. And that is a very scary front seven, guys, for a team that defense that only gave up 18 points a game, I think, last year with all the injuries they had. So I think they think they're close, and if they can get up to about 20, over 20 points a game on offense, they got a chance to win NFC North.
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying, especially on that defense, but I worry about the back end. I mean, I think they'll be okay at safety because, you know, it's easy to find a box safety, and they got the center fielder and Eddie Jackson, but I worry about the corner position. And, you know, if anything happened to Kyle Fuller right now, I don't even know how you line them up. And I think that's why I would go with that position with the first of my 2 second-round picks, or even the second one, depending on it. We keep hearing a lot about how they need an offensive lineman.
Yes, we do. We keep it. Yeah, let's say that again.
but I want to know why. I think you need weapons in that offense more than anything else. They can't score points, Olin. It's the damnedest thing I've ever seen.
No, they can't. They can't score points, and we talked about that too, right? It's always fascinating to me that everybody keeps bringing up the run game as the number one thing to fix, and the problem is they can't put the ball in the end zone. And if you go all the way back to last year, and you look at that Denver game where they had 153 yards rushing for a 5-yard average, they scored 16 points, right? San Diego, they played San Diego, they have 160 yards rushing, they scored 16 points again. So I agree with you. They do have a big problem scoring points. It's probably why they reached on Jimmy Graham a little bit. I would like to see, obviously, a big young offensive guard in the mix in there. I think that would do well just for the Bears, just for them as a franchise and moving forward, get a good young offensive lineman in there. I know they just signed Ifedi from the Seahawks. He'll probably compete with Alex Bars and Rashad Coward over there at the right guard spot, but a good, young, big offensive guard, mauling type. Kyle Long's unfortunate injuries left a big hole there. for them last year. As far as cornerback goes, they had some injuries there last year, right? Tolliver played a few times for Prince, and they did pretty well. They did pretty well out there. Still held guys down, but I will not argue with you that when you get to that spot, whoever's highest on your board there for your need positions, I think that's who you take in that second round. You don't ever want to reach for guys you don't really like just because it's a position. So hopefully there's an offensive guard there. Hub Arkis should be a guy to talk to about draft guys who are coming up in the draft and guys you're looking at. But if there's not a guard, I'm with you. A safety or a cornerback out there, they seem to get a lot. Artie Burns they signed. They have a few guys on their roster they want to take a look at. The guy from the Canadian Football League, I forget his name now, but they have a few guys in that mix, just like they do it at guard, and they're hoping that one guy develops and guy hits out there and has himself a pretty good season.
Roberson is the cornerback you're referring to from the Canadian mm-hmm. Football League, Olin. And, in regard to the offensive line, it's interesting because the guard position, according to some of the, analysts, it's not as deep as the tackle position. And I think you have guys in the first round who maybe there'll be six tackles who could have first round grades. If one of them were to drop to the Bears, you do have two tackles that you have contract extensions that were signed, I think, last offseason. You have guys who are locked up for the relatively long-term future. Would you pick a tackle anyway? Would you let your current roster prevent you from or talk you out of drafting a tackle if it's a guy that you've graded highly?
No, not at all. Tackles are rare commodities to have, guys who can play it, but you can stick them in there. This guy coming in, Jermaine Ifedi from the Seahawks, he was drafted as a tackle, right? Early in the first round, and he'll probably try a right guard. So you take a left tackle, you can always move James or Cody over to right guard. Cody Whitehair has played some right guard, so you can put him in there at left guard and just kind of groom him there. A lot of tackles do start out as guards. So if you want to keep your tackles because they're under contract in Leno, and I know they just gave a contract to Massey last year, but if there's a good tackle there, you take him, and you can plug him in at guard for a year. Or you let them compete and let all the guys compete in there like you just did with Mitch Trubisky, and you throw them all on the field and you find out what shakes out and who your best five is. So you take the best player there at offensive line, period. Position does not matter, right? You take the guy who you think is the best. Now, for me, they have enough center body types, the guys who are, under 6'4", not really big guys. So for me, you take the best tackle or guard there. And you plug him in. And if you want to let him compete, his position is left tackle. You let him compete with Leno, or you just let it all shake out and put your best five on the field and end up blocking people. So I don't think whether they come in as a tackle and or a guard really matters to you. You just take them, and a lot of tackles, like I said, have been groomed as guards before you kick them out.
Olin, it's fairly obvious that Matt Nagy can't run his scheme without a tight end. I mean, I don't know how else you have nine tight ends under contract and you got Trey Burton and you got Jimmy Graham both playing the U tight end. That's the position that he feels he has to have. Maybe that was reinforced with Kelce winning the Super Bowl and Kittle on the other team. I don't know if it's as simple as that, but it seems like if you're keeping Trey Burton, and I'm not sure where that is, that might prevent me from worrying about that position in a draft where there's only one player. And I know he could be there in the second round, but it seems like they got a lot of investment already in that position.
Yeah. And they're searching. They're searching for a guy. And I'm, like you said, this scheme, when you look at Kelce and Ertz, it kind of centers around that position a little bit, a guy who can be on the field all the time. And that's the one worry when they signed Jimmy Graham, when everybody looked at it, right? When you watch Green Bay's film from last year, I mean, Jimmy Graham pretty much came in as a third down tight end / wide receiver, right? Well, Mercedes Lewis, and I don't know all their tight ends names up there in Green Bay, but those other guys were on the field when they were trying to do other things, when they were trying to run the ball. Jimmy Graham, I think, only played about 50% of the snaps, and he wasn't really in there on first and second down a lot, especially late in the year. So interesting to see what their plan is for him and how they want to use Jimmy Graham and then Trey Burton and Adam Shaheen and where they all fit in there. So I know they have nine guys under contract. And like you said, it's really important for this offense to have a tight end, a guy out there who could split out, but also block in the run game, get aggressive, but challenge that defense in the middle of the field and open things up for Allen Robinson and Miller on the outside. So we'll see what happens there. It'll be interesting to hear Coach Nagy on the podium talking about, you know, the new coaches he brought in, DeFilippo, Clancy Barone, Bill Lazar, just all these guys he brought in to run this scheme now, because at the end of the year, we all know, and we're going into Coach Nagy's third year here, we all know what the problem with that team was, right? It was that they scored 17 points a game, and it really started from week 14 the year before against the Rams, when the Rams shut them down, and I think they've been averaging under 20 points a game from then. So they only scored, they didn't score much in that playoff game against the Eagles. I think it was only 16 points. So it's been a problem for a while, guys. And getting this offense fixed is big. It's a big year for Coach Nagy. We keep talking about all the players that they brought in. We keep talking about all these guys, all these positions. I think at some point you got to start to wonder, if you're up there in the Bears facility, do you have the right coach? Did you bring in the guy you thought you were going to bring in? Because we were sold that this guy was an elite play caller and a quarterback coach, and they brought in Heffrick, and they kept Ragone on staff, and they had three quarterback coaches, and everything was about the quarterback, and they were going to develop him. And here we are now in year three of Mr. Trubisky, and we have to bring in another quarterback because he did not develop. So as far as play calling goes, as far as scheme goes, that is a big question mark for me, something I'm really going to be watching this year to see where that all heads. You got DeFilippo has been fired by two or three teams. Lazar has been fired by two or three teams. So kind of like last chance you up there at Halas Hall for offensive guys.
Strong stuff, Olin. Before I let you go, I want to take you back. So on Sunday, the score is doing a cool thing. Bears Classics every Sunday at noon. We're playing a game from the Bears past that was significant for whatever reason. And this weekend, it's October 16th, 2006, out in the desert. Bears are down 23-3, seconds left in the third quarter, six turnovers, miss a field goal by the Cardinals, miss a field goal with 48 seconds left, and the Bears 24-23. They beat the Cardinals. Hester's 83-yard punt return. That, to me, was the defining victory of that season. You were in the middle of it. What do you remember, and how cool will it be for you to hear that broadcast on Sunday?
Well, not too cool for the offensive guys who really sucked that game, but it was an amazing game, right? And if you go back and look at it like an analyst, like I am now, which is always fun for me, guys, to be honest, to go back and kind of break games down like I would break them down now. We're going through that game. The Cardinals are 1-4. They bench Kurt Warner. They're starting rookie Matt Leinart, right? They threw with the 10th pick of that draft. The Chicago Bears going through that game. We're 5-0. We're averaging over 31 points a game on offense. Our defense is only giving up 7-point-something points a game, right? So it's under 8 points a game. So that's how high we're flying. And as an offense, I'm sure we're thinking, well, they got a rookie quarterback against Brian Urlacher, Mike Brown, Lance Briggs, Adewale Ogunleye, Alex Brown, Nathan Basher, Peanut Tillman. These guys ain't got a chance to even move the ball, right? Well, Liner does what he did the week before, and he puts up 14 quick points. And I'm sure that shocked all of us on offense, right? And Clancy Pendergast was the defensive coordinator for the Cardinals, and he just decided to play goal line defense against us and force Rex Grossman to beat him. And on the first play of the game, Bernard Berrien runs right by Rowe, and Rex Grossman misses him. And that was the story of our game on offense. And we did, I think we had one drive in the third quarter, which is pretty good. For whatever reason, Ron Turner came out and wanted to throw the ball all over the place, which was never a good recipe for us that year. Came out in the third quarter and finally ran the ball three times in a row. And lo and behold, we went on a good drive and kicked the field goal. So that was it for us on offense. And the rest of the thing was just our defense. I think it was Mark Anderson hit Leinart, Mike Brown scooped it up. I remember just watching the performance that Brian Urlacher, who is now a first ballot Hall of Famer, put on. I mean, it was amazing. He was all over the place, ripped the ball out. Peanut Tillman scooped it up. And then we're on the side, and I think, we don't need a field goal. We need a touchdown to win. And I think I was standing by Reuben Brown, and I was lined up, and I looked at him, and I said, for us to even have a chance, I think Hester has to take this back. And he was like, if that happens, that's going to be unbelievable. And Hess catches the ball for whatever reason in the middle of the field. That year, like you guys know, if Hester caught the ball in the middle of the field, he was gone, man. It was so crazy. That guy was that good. He was electric. And you could, like, as soon as he caught it, I mean, I don't know who I was standing by. Usually the offensive lineman, we stood there because we were about to go on the field. And you could hear about six or seven guys whisper, he's gone. Like, you just knew. Like, he's gone. Like, you just knew. Like, that's how good Hess was. I remember a few times that year, if he caught the ball in the middle of the field, I just turned around and walked to the bench because I wasn't on extra point. I wasn't big enough. So I wasn't going to be on the field because he was going to score. So he scored that touchdown. Then we go in the locker room, and we got, you know, we got Coach on, Coach Green on, rest in peace, great coach. We got him on, and he's screaming, slamming the podium because if you remember in the preseason, they beat us right in that third game. And there was kind of talk all week that we didn't really play in that game. And he was arguing that we did, and we gave it our best shot, and they still beat us. And so he slammed the podium and said, we are who they thought we were. And we just started dying laughing. And we exploded in that locker room. It was a great plane ride back. Again, the defense, what a performance. And Devin Hester, what a performance by them. I think we had six turnovers. Like, holy crap. No, we won.
It was unbelievable. Yeah, two things stood out to me. I remember I went back and looked at my follow story, which was exactly what you said. That I remember I was in a van going to the airport from the rental car place, finishing my story, which was like, this is how you get in the Hall of Fame, a game like that. Urlacher, I don't even know what it was like. He had 27 tackles or something in the fourth quarter. I've never seen anything like that. And then, we're standing outside the locker room waiting to go in, and you could hear people roaring, laughing. It was like the atmosphere in that locker room was unlike any I'd ever been in. It was almost like everybody came in and it was like, quick, let's get out of here before the cops come. We pulled it off. It was like a heist. It was the funniest damn thing I have ever been around in covering professional football.
It was like you couldn't believe it, but you just had lived it.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was. It was, you're standing there, and, you know, obviously we're all here now, and it's easy to say it now, but it was the first ballot Hall of Famer putting on a show, right? And you're standing there, and it's the greatest punt returner to ever live is standing in the middle of the field. So it's not as shocking as you think it is, you know what I mean? No. But when he's young, a young rookie there, and you're like, he there's no way he takes this back, right? There's no way he does this, because it's like if you wrote the story, Hester takes it back at that moment, right? And he did it. He was just the guy, like we all know, you know, when Superman used to play in Soldier Field and all that stuff was going on, and that defense was just incredible, and our run game was rolling, and Hester was good. There's a reason, right? I mean, if you think about it, guys, I mean, we're 13-2 in every game we played in the regular season that year, right? Because the Packers game, we didn't play all our starters. So, obviously, the last game of the year, we lost that game, went up 13-3, but that was a good football team. And Mike Brown was still healthy. I think he got hurt, actually, in that game.
That game.
Mike Brown, yeah, probably the best safety in the league that year. Tommy Harris was still playing. He got hurt maybe five or 6 weeks later. Two All-Pros. When that defense was healthy, guys, I mean, I played against them in camp. There wasn't much we could do on offense. They were just it was an amazing unit. Something a lot of people don't talk about is the fact that Mike Brown and Tommy Harris were not there for that Super Bowl run. That defense was unbelievable at that moment. And that's why for us to go down 20-0 at half with a defense who's only giving up 7 points a game and started the whole year out with a shutout in Green Bay was shocking for us. But the character of that team and the guys in there and no one flinched in the locker room and just, you know, just find a way to win the game. And that's what the team did.
Great stuff, Olin. Thanks a ton, buddy. Really appreciate it.
Have a good weekend,
appreciate
Olin.
It, guys. You too.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.